Hikdisha Isasa. A woman consecrated her dough. She made it hektish. Achilo Gilgala, before she needed the dough. Uptayasa, and then before she needed it, she redeemed it. Chayevet, so she has to take off chala when she needs it. Because at the time she needs it, it's no longer hektish anymore, so therefore she has to take off chala. No two ways about it. Hikdisha so Achilo Gilgala, she made it hektish. And redeemed it all before needing it. Okay. However, hikdisha so achilo gilgula, if she made hektish before she needed it, v'gilgula gizbar, and then the treasure of hektish actually needed the dough, and then she redeemed it after the treasure of hektish had done it, petura, then she's exempt on chala. Why is that? Shebashas chavos, at the time when the determining time, the critical time when it was being needed, was being done, haisa petura, was exempt because it was done by hektish. Or kayotibo, similarly, hamakdip shapiros, of somebody who consecrates his fruit, achlo bolonas maisras, before they become susceptible to the obligation to be tithe, uptoyan, and then you redeem them chayot before the obligation devolves upon them chayovin, they are liable, of course, to be tithe because they weren't in the domain of hektish at the critical point. Mishabolonos Meisers, once they reached the point of Meiser, and they were under the jurisdiction of Hektesh Updon, and then only subsequently redeemed them, Chayovin, they are liable for Meiser. Hikdishna Chalo Nigmaru, therefore, if you consecrated them before they were completed, and then Gemara and Gizbar, the Gizbar completed them, and then you redeem them, then they are exempt, because Shemeshas Chavos, at the time when the obligation devolves upon them, they were exempt. Now, what are we talking about here? What is the obligation? What is the time in which you're obligated to set aside Meiser? When is that point of obligation? Do you remember? When you smooth the pile. But there's another time, which is when it grows to a third.
Oh, that's right.
There are two times which are critical in Meiser. A, that at the time that grows to the size of a third, it's in the hands of a Jew. And B, that when you smooth the pile, it's in the hands of the Jew. And the Gemara is going to pick up on that now. We just started when the Gemara on... the Gemara right after Halacha Gimel. Lama Tanisa Trey Zimnin. Why do we have two Mishnahs that say the same thing? One is in Peo and one is here. They seem to say the same thing. So Rabbi Chunan, Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Shimon Levi, all say b'shem Rabbeinu, name Rabbeinu, Achas Miruach v'Achas L'Shlish. Because there are two critical times in the lifetime of something being Chayv and Meiser. One is when the pile is smooth, and one is when it grows to the growth to the size of a third. So at both of those junctures, it's got to be in the hands of a Jew and not in the hands of Hektish in order to be liable for Meiseris. Okay? Rabbi Yossi Amar, Rabbi Ba the Chevraya. And continuing along these lines, Rabbi Yossi said that Rabbi Ba and Chevraya, Rabbi Ba and the Chevra in the base Medrash discussed this matter. The Chevraya said, as we just in fact said, Achzim Ruach, one of these Mishnayas, which exempts Meiser if at the time of exempts a crop from Meiser, if at the time the obligation for Meiser devolves, it's in the hands of Hektish, one of them pertains to Miruach, to the smoothing of the pile, Vachash Lashish, and the other pertains to when it grows to the size of a third. Rabbi Ba Mifaresh, which is which? Rabbi Ba Mifaresh, Rabbi Ba explained, L'chala L'miruach. Our Mishnah is talking about when the pile gets smooth. In other words, that point it cannot be in the time of Hektesh. Why is that? Because why is our let me finish the sentence. And Peah and the Mishnah in Peah, which says that at a certain time it cannot be in the hands of Hektesh, that's referring to when it goes to the third, that at that point it cannot be in the hands of Hektesh. Well, how does he know that our Mishnah is talking about Miruach? Because our Mishnah draws a parallel between Chala and Meiser. And challah, of course, only becomes, devolves, the obligation to take off challah only devolves at the very end of the process, right, when you're fully kneading the dough. So to the other thing which is mentioned in our mission, which is that the time of Meiser should not be in the hands of Hekdesh, it should be in the hands of a regular Jewish person. That also must be talking at the time when it comes to the end of the process, which means by fruit and vegetables and anything other than grain at the time of Miruach. Okay? Says Mara furthermore, Umasnisa our mission is Rabbi Akiva. Our mission is going to Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva Amar, Akiva said, Achashlish, now here's a big typo, Achashlish Harishon it should be. After the first Shlish at Mahalach, you go after the first third. In other words, Rabbi Akiva holds, we had this back in the Masechta Maisers. We had this in Masechta Maisers, where the Machlos Aki Rabbana. Rabbi Akiva holds, once a third has grown in the jurisdiction of a non-Jew, can never become Chayva Maisers again. That's it. It's exempt for all time. Rabbanon hold, if the last, let's say, 5/8 grew in the hands of a Jew, so proportionally 5/8 of the grain is chayiv and trumas and maisrus. They hold it's proportionate. So that Mishnah Peah, which says that if a third grows, if the point of a third is reached when the grain is under the jurisdiction of Hekdesh, then you are potter for all time. That's clearly going to be Rabbi Akiva. Because like Rabbanon, when you get it back and it grows proportionally in your domain, you're higher proportionally in whatever grows in your domain. Okay? So that's what Gemara says here. That Masnisa Rabbi Akiva Amar Rakiva said, Achashlish, again it should be Harishon Ad Malchi, follow the first turn. The Spalgon goes, you have a machlokus about this, as I just told you. So this should be a Shlish Livnei Goy. A field which grew to a third of its growth under the jurisdiction of a non-Jew. Ulukachi, so and then subsequently a Jew took hold of it. Rabbi Akiva Omer HaTosefes Pot, or Rabbi Akiva says the additional growth is exempt. Rabbi Chachom would say the additional growth is chayev proportionally as it grows. Maikadun, how do you judge this man? In other words, how do you learn our Mishnah? Tipater, you explain it. Oh, like we just said with Rabbi Akiva, that our Mishnah, or actually the Mishnah in Peah, which exempts if it grows to the third in the hands of a goy, is either going like Rabbi Akiva, who says subsequently there is no chiyuv which can be affixed to it, or it should be here. Rabbi Akiva, I'm sorry. Rabbi Akiva, the next word is also a typo. Rabbi Akiva bito sefes, not bimachlokis, but bito sefes, and that all the additional growth is exempt. Okadivri Ako, or it may well be going even koin rabbanon, but in a case where immediately after grows to a third, bekoitzer miyad, you cut it down. So that way there's no additional proportional growth which can be ascribed to the scribe to a Jew, that there should be anything which a Jew should be chayiv to give. Okay, halacha dalet, masnisin, nachri shenasa l'Yisrael isa, a guy who gave a Jew a dough, lasoslo, to make for him p'tura min achal, it's part of the chal. So you have, let's say, a Jew is working in a non-Jewish bakery, doesn't have to take off chal, right? It's obvious. To Noslo Matona, if, however, the guy gives the Jew the dough as a gift, if it's before the kneading, so chayevis, then the Jew's kneading makes it chayev. Misha Gilga, if he gives the gift after the kneading, Petura remains exempt. Ha'osa Isli Manochri, what if you are a shooter for, let's say, you own a Dunkin' Donuts together with a guy, right? Ha'osa Isli Manochri, you make up a dough together with the goy. Imein b'shal Yisrael kashir chala. If there in the portion of the Jew there is no shear of chala, meaning that together the entire dough is less than double the amount of shear chala, right? So each one of you, so the Jew owns less than a shear. P'tur min chala, it's exempt. Gershnis Gayer, a goy who became Jewish. Vaisalo Isa, not ever tell you. I must have told you. Rabbi Yosef Engel's Medayik. For everywhere to the chat it says Gershon is Geyer. What do you mean? So Goyshin is Geyer, not a Gershon is Geyer. So from here is Medayik that everybody who becomes a Ger really had a Jewish neshama. It was just dormant till now. Because he has a very, his Chakira, wet, because a Ger only become a Jew, Mikano Lahaba, or is Mikano Lahaba Lamafreya. But he got Nilsim afraid that he had a Jewish neshama. So he's medayik from the fact that it always says Gershon is Geyer, that he really was always Jewish inside. Okay? I don't know why it came to mind right now. But anyway, Gershon is Geyer. Vaislo Isa, a Ger, became a Ger, and he had a dough. Ema Nasi Sachaloni is Geyer. If the dough was made before he became a Ger, obviously Potter is exempt, because at the time when the obligation should devolve, it could not devolve. Umishni is Geyer. If, however, he needed the dough after he became a Ger, Chayev. What im suffik? What if while he was in the mikveh they were kneading his dough? They were having a suda after he was Megaya, right? So they were kneading the dough for the suda, and they don't know if they needed it when he was before he went to the water, after he came out of the water. They don't know. Chayef. We saw it because Chayef. In Chayef Le Chomesh, however, since it's a suffix, if a czar, a non-Kohen eats it, so it doesn't have to pay a fifth like it would normally have to pay. Right, we keep on there. Hakolich acha krima betanur. Very interesting thing that as long as it's megayer before it forms a crust in the oven, even if it's after the kneading of the dough, he's still chayv take of challah. You take of challah from the loaf when it comes out of the oven, he's still chayv and challah. The shas chiv has not expired until such time as it forms a crust in the oven. Okay?
Similar scenario of a woman that was pregnant and as she's in the mikvah, she's giving birth.
Yeah, something like that. We had something like that. Right. Similar idea. But there it wasn't as bad. He wasn't needing the dough in the mikvah necessarily.
She's giving birth in the mikvah.
Okay. Okay. Ma veinol isos arnona. This is a very interesting question we're asked. What's the difference between this and the dough for quartering soldiers? I don't know if it's quartering soldiers really, or yeah, quartering soldiers. Remember that we revolted against the British because they were quartering soldiers. Everybody remember their American history?
Yes. I think with the Romans, it wasn't that they had to quarter them. They had to pay, though, for their lodges.
Well, here they had to make them bread. Here they actually had to make them bread. So the thing is, you own the bread, but who you're being compelled, you own the dough, but you're being compelled to feed it to a goy. You are in mechuyev, in this case, to take off challah from the dough which you're needing for them. So ask them, are my benelah be lisa sarnona? What's it between the case where you're needing dough which belongs to a goy and the case where you're needing dough for the soldiers you're quartering? Shema ena chayevis b'chala, is it not chayev and chala over there? So why not in our Mishnah? So the Gemara rejects that. Of course, the Gemara says, no comparison. Tamon b'yushus Yisraelu. There, by the quartering of the soldiers, the Jew is making the dough on his own. Shemi yimolech ha-goy litlo. Maybe the goy will change his mind and not take it. And then who owns it? The Jew owns it, right? B'ram hocha, but here, l'daito itluya, is it up to the Yisrael to decide to keep it to himself? Obviously it isn't, because it's the goy's dough. So therefore here, it's exempt altogether. Tani Rabbi Yehuda said, the Torah, Malai shel Yisrael, the merchandise belongs to a Jew. Upal in goyim, the workers are goyim. They're working with the merchandise here, being specifically the dough. Chai b'chala. So if you have, as very often is the case, you have a Jewish bakery, not Jewish workers, you have to think of chala nonetheless. Okay? Malai shel goy, vice versa. Let's say you have a breadsmith where the belongs to a goy. Upal in Yisrael, osim b'socho, you even have Jewish workers working there. Patim in a chal is exempt from chala, because ultimately it belongs to the goy. Rabbi Yossi says, that's our Mishnah. Of Hanan Amitriya, we also learn our Mishnah. Nochi Shinasan Yisrael Lassus Loisa, a goy who gave a Jew to make for him a dough, Betura mina chala, it's exempt from chala. It's explicit, right? Rabbi Bun Barchia, Bokumi Rabbi Zira, ask him for Rabbi Zira. Now this is going to the next case in our Mishnah, really, not in the case we were just discussing. We said in our Mishnah, if the Jews if a Jew and a goy have a partnership in a dough, we said so really has to have double the amount of the shear in order to be chayiv and chal, because each one is half. Now, Rabbi Barachia, Boy Kumi, Rabbi Zira, asked for Rabbi Zira, Fafil Yesh B'Shei Yisrael Kashir, even if he owns enough to make it a shear. It's a fascinating question. I'm amazed by the question, but the question is, it's almost that picture, but not quite. That's okay, I can use this. His question is like this. Let's say they both own half, but let's say the half of the Jew is like this. And then the goy is in the middle. So in that case, the two halves of the Jew are not joined together. So why is the Jew chayv and challah? Even if he owns the amount, but it's not they're not joined together. That's where it's kasha. Yeah, let's say it's a measure over here, v'kamikan a measure over here, v'kam v'goy b'emta, in other words, half a measure on each side, and the full measure of the goy in the middle, so they don't have in any one spot enough to make you chayv and challah. Amalei Rabbi Zira responded to him, Veinam Ura Vayidei Gidin. You don't think it's mixed together by strands? Now, strands, very interesting language, Lashon. I don't know what he means by strands. What he means is that, the dough is kneaded, right? So if it's kneaded, there's no way that this is not linked in some way, shape, or form to over there. And you don't need, like that case, a beitza of link in the middle, right? That's for tumah and tahara, to transmit tumah across. But in order to make it one dough for challah, it can just be connected by a filament. It doesn't be connected by something significant. So therefore, the odds are overwhelming that in this case there's going to be some connection through the non-Jew's dough that's going to make it chayv and challah. What? As what? Well, here even if at the time before you braided it, but it's still in the dough. So we're saying, because that's the point when you take off the challah.
I don't think it's dependent on the shape.
No, granted, it's not. We're talking about the question is whether there's some scenario. His question is a funny question. His question was hypothetically, there should be some scenario we could conceive of in which the Jew's part should not be considered connected and should be exempt from challah, even though there's a shear, because the goy is a hefsek, an interruption. So he's saying there's no such scenario, because ultimately it's all connected. Okay, Talmudim, we looked over there about Zroh L'chaim and Keva. Remember what Zroh L'chaim and Keva are? If I translate, you'll remember. Zroa is the arm, L'chaim is the cheeks, and the Keva is the stomach. Who gets it? From what?
From cow.
A cow which is shechted where? No, outside the temple. Anything said, what does the coin get from things which are shechted inside the temple? No, not everything. From Shlomim.
Oh, from Shlomim.
Yeah. The chaz of a shok. Remember what that is? The chest and the thigh. Right. Okay, the Zohar Chaim and Keva are what he gets from a regular animal. Okay? After Chazer Chulin, another 5 years. Okay, Talmud today we learned over there, Gershon is Geyer, a Ger who is Megayer, Vaisla Pora, and he had a cow which is being shechted. Again, they're breaking his bread in one place and they're slaughtering his cow in another place. It's a big suitor getting prepared here. Gershon is Geyer, Vaisla Pora, he had a cow which is being slaughtered. Actually, his Geyer, if the cow was slaughtered for him before he was Megayer, before he became Jewish, butter, it's an exempt from giving the Zroh L'chaim and Keva to the Kohen. Mishnah's guy shechted after his Megayer, so Chayv, he has to give Zroh L'chaim and Keva to the Kohen. Vim Safek, if it's a Safek when it was shechted, right, it was in the mikveh at the time, potter. He doesn't have to give it all because Hamotzi B'chaver Losh, Hamotzi B'chaver Lo V'Raya, the Kohen has to prove that he actually deserves it. That, in other words, at the time of slaughter, the guy was already Jewish, the owner of the cow. Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to ask. You're asking good. So it says, when Taman Atomar, in that mission, that case over there, by the Zerah L'chaim gave, he said, Safik, when in doubt, Pati, you don't have to give. But here by Chala Atomar, he said, when in doubt, Safik, Chayav, Safik, you do have to give. So how do we reconcile the two cases? Rabbi Yaakov says, he tafsukumi Rabbi Yami, he asked this question from Yami, Vomar, and he said to me, very interesting answer, he said, Mi Omar Lee, who would tell me, now here's a typo, should be, instead of Shu, it should be She'eno, Nota Domine Shevet. Who says by Chala he doesn't get paid by the Kohen? Don't think he's got to give the Chala to the Kohen for free. He can demand payment from the Kohen for giving him the Chala. So the obvious question is, the Gemara's going to ask it. I don't have to ask it myself. But first Gemara says, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Zavdi and Rabbi Chiya B'Shem Rabbi Lezer said, Noitul Domi No Shevet. That is in fact the case. Although you give the challah here, you can charge the Kohen for the challah. So says the Gemara, if that's the case, still, V'yafish, this is the obvious question I was referring to, V'yafish Tamon. So over there also, separate, V'yitul Domi No Shevet. In other words, give the coin to Zerah L'chaim and Kev and charge him for it. Why is it not consistent? Why over here do I say give the coin to the Chal and charge for him, and I do not say that over there? So it says more, I'll tell you why. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi said, Chala, by Chala she eat tevel. If you don't take Chala off a dough, can you eat the dough? No, it's tevel. Uvav and Mitzvah, if you eat it, you get killed by God, right? So therefore, in Abba Chala, we're more stringent. In order to avoid that prohibition, mafrish, you separate the Chala, and here's a typo, it should be v'yito, not v'lo yito, but v'yito, and yito domina shevet, and you get the money paid back to you from the priestly tribe. There it should be, now here it should be also as a typo, it should be Hossam al shem, Hossam there, not just al shem, but Hossam there al shem amotzi mechaver levaraya. There, if you don't give Zerah L'chaim and Kev, well, you can still eat the cow, right? As we do today, we don't give Zerah L'chaim and Kev, we eat it anyway. So therefore, there we don't have to. There's no need to separate it. Here, you're compelled to separate it in order to not transgress the prohibition of tevel. Once you separate it, you give to the coin, but you're allowed to charge a coin for it because he doesn't know if he actually deserves getting it as a gift. Over there, you don't have to bother separating it because it's not tevel. Hi, the coin wants it, let him prove that it's coming to him. Otherwise, you have no obligation to separate it. Yeah, but he has no obligation to. He has no obligation to, because I'm ultimately chaver levaraya. Let the guy prove it's coming to him. Amrei bum barachia shnei goyim, two goyim, shasu shnei kabin, who made two times the shear. No, they made the shear. Shnei kabin means the shear in this case. It's not exact. Obviously, shnei kabin is not the shear. The shear is far chamesh revoim. But we're just using the numbers randomly. The mean is they have a shear together. The chok. Now they divide it. Vosifu zel shelo v'zel shelo. Now they add it on to each other. Now, what's not clear here is that they were Megayer. It doesn't say they're Megayer, but obviously they were, because otherwise the Oshaya doesn't start. Now there's another important introductory point. Rabbi Yochanan holds, we had it before, but we all forgot it by now. Rabbi Yochanan holds that when you make a dough, even if it's quite large, but your intent is to divide it up, we had this by the Nachdom in the first parak. If you make a large dough, but your intent is to divide it up eventually, so then it's exempt from challah. Why? Because the end result is that it's going to be little batches, even though now it's a big batch. We said that's not true by baker, because by baker, he might sell the whole thing to one person if he gets one person who wants to buy the whole thing. But generally speaking, by a person, private individual, he makes one dough with the intent of splitting up, it's exempt. Okay? So now, these two goyim originally had this dough together. Okay? They had this dough together. And was together and had a shear of challah. So hypothetically, it should be potter at that point because you needed or dough together. But then, but they always intended to split it up. So therefore, it should. It really was exempt from challah. It wasn't chayav in challah. So again, shnei goyim shasu shnei kabin v'chok, and then they split it up, and then they were megayer. They became Jewish. And now each one built up his portion to the point where it's the sufficient size to make challah. Chayavin. So now the chayav to take off challah. Why? Shaloi solem shas choiva v'niftaru. They never had a time on the top of Yud Ches and Malav now. They never had a time when they were obligated and therefore obligated as goyim and therefore exempt. Why? Because at the beginning, when it was so significant enough size, their intent was to divide it up. So therefore, that point was not a shas chiyuv. Wasn't a time when they could have become obligated. So therefore, there's never any point of obligation reached at the time that they're non-Jews, which would continue to exempt them once they became Jewish. Okay? That doesn't matter. That would have exempted them, though. No, then they would have exempted even when they became Jewish. Because there was a shas chiyuv, a time when the obligation could have devolved and did not devolve. So that would have exempted them permanently. Okay?
So I can't remember when everybody brings it back to the baker.
It's exempt because everybody takes back their own part. Okay? Now, let's talk about Jews. Shnei Yisraelim Shasu Shnei Kabin. Two Jews who made in partnership a sufficient shear, the choku, and they intended to split up, and they did split up. And now they added, each one added on. So each one had a half measure now, and each one had to make it a full measure, in this case, peturi. They're exempt from giving challah. Why? Shekvar hoislem shas choyva v'niftu. They had a time when they could have been suitable to be obliged, when they were partners and they got together. But at that time, they were exempted because they had in mind to divide it up. So therefore, they remain that half, which each one gets, remains exempt. And then even if you tack on another half to that half, your first half still remains exempt, and therefore you will not be chayv to take off challah. Okay? It's a good loophole, right? Okay? But it's still not going to be a good loophole for a large amount of dough, because then even if you split it up, you're probably going to be left with enough dough to make a shear anyway. Yisrael v'goy shasu shnei kabin. Now here is a little bit complicated case. A Jew and a goy were partners. That is shear. The chok, they divide up. V'osiv v'zeh shalom v'zeh shalom. And now they added each one to the other, to his own. Of course, the goy was Megayer at this point, right? Chalko sheyisrael chayiv. The chalik of the goy, Jew, is chayiv because he never had a time when he could have been chayiv previously when he could have been exempt, right? Because the goy on the other half, right? Chalko shel goy mo. What about the part of the goy, which the part of the goy is considered to have a shas chiyuv when he was the partner with the Jew, and therefore does remain chayav later? Does he become potter later on or not? Okay, that's the question of the Gemara. So now the Gemara has a lot of typos in these next two lines, actually two to be exact. Klum. This is the way to read it. Klum chelko shel Yisrael chayav. Let's analyze this. Why is the portion of the Jew chayav? Lo machmas chelko shel goy? Is not because of the portion of the goy? Now, this is a very complicated thing. What it means is like this. Why is the Jew's portion chayav now? Because originally when he had the partnership with the goy, so that wasn't considered to be a time of obligation, because although they had a shear together and they intended to divide it up at that time, nonetheless it's not considered to be a proper shear because the goy's portion was really not chayev. Goy's parsha is not really nachayev. So therefore, it's not a shasachiyuv. And later on, when the Yisrael adds on to his half, another half, that becomes the first shasachiyuv. That's under the jurisdiction of a Jew, it's chayev. Right? So since the chelik of the Yisrael is chayev because the chelik of the Goy is attached to it, so therefore, continuing further in the Gemara, chelko shel Yisrael chayev. You want the chelik of Yisrael to be chayev and the chelik of the Goy to be potter? No, it's got to be reflexive. If the Jews Porto never had a shasa kosher, never had a shas chiv, you never had a time of obligation, because the time that it reached originally 5/4, it was together with the non-Jews chelik and they intended to divide it up. And that's why later on, when Yisrael gets to add on to it, to make it a full portion of his own, he continues, it is chayv and chala, because that's the first shasachiv. So it stands to reason that the goy's dough must reflect that status as well. And therefore, even though the goy was joined together with the Yisrael at the beginning, that's meaningless. And therefore, later on, when the goy converts and he adds on, so then he also becomes chayv and chala as well. Okay? So basically, the goy's dough has to reflect the Yisrael's dough's din as well.
So it's ironic, the goy, once he converts, is more chayv for his portion, while the Jew...
No, they're both chayv here. That's the point. It's amigo. Since the Jew is chayv, that's why the goy has to be chayv. The Jew is chayv because even though originally... That's the point. Since there was no shaschiv with the goy, so therefore later on when he adds on, that becomes the initial shaschiv, and then he's chayev. So our question was, yes, but what about the goy, right? His original dough, originally before he converted, right? So as far as he was concerned, there's no halacha, so maybe now it's considered to be that it reached far... Though it's by a Jew, there's halacha that where you make it, al manas l'chalek, that's not considered to be a shas chiyuv, right? But made by goy, we're saying there's no such halacha. So originally, when they made it in partnership together, so maybe that was considered for him a shas chiyuv, and therefore he remains exempt even once he's a megayer. And that would say, no, the fact that the Yisrael remains is chayev later on indicates that there was never a prior shas chiyuv, and therefore the goy's dough also, once he becomes Jewish and tax on another half, it is chayev and chal as well. Okay, Rabbi Akiva. Now, actually, we have one of these rare cases in the Yerushalmi, which has a header. You know, you appreciate when you have gemaras like this, when they don't have a kavanaki. What a wonderful service the kavanaki did by providing you with headers. Okay, Rabbi Akiva Hemer. Hakol. What? Maybe Shemara right. That's why, because he wanted to be parsimonious on the headers, so he split up the mission. Everything goes by the time when it forms a crust in the oven. Chevraya b'shem Rabbi Lezer said, the Chevra has said the name Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Akiva l'chachomin. Rabbi Akiva concedes the point to the rabbis, b'sas hedyot, at the time in the dough of a commoner, of a common individual, that shagilgula tibula, that when it's become tevel, when it's needed here. What is
one second?
What?
Okay.
Oh yeah, okay. I forgot. Yeah, I just forgot. What it means is like this. It's a little bit more complicated. It seems at face value. What it means is that what happens by hektish? If I'm makdish a dough, hektish needs it. Then I get it back. I redeem for hektish, and then I bake it. Rabbi Akiva concedes there that I remain exempt from challah. It's only in this case, in our Mishnah, of a guy who's a guy is becoming Jewish, that his shasachiyuv can still be chayiv up to the point that it forms a crust in the oven. He draws the distinction between a dough which belonged to a hedyot, to a commoner, was given to Hekdesh and then brought back again, and in the case of a goy, you became Jewish in midstream. That's the distinction. Why is that? Why is that? Because there's a logic to that. Because by the case where the Jew owns it, it was susceptible already to challah at the time of needing. It didn't become susceptible then because it was in the hands of Hekdesh. It therefore retains its exemption for all eternity. By a guy who needed it when he was still not Jewish. So at that point, it wasn't that susceptible to challah that it should become exempt. It can still become susceptible later on, therefore, whereas when he's megayer, as long as it hasn't yet formed a crust in the oven. And therefore, at that point, in fact, he becomes chayiv and challah. Do you see that? When he's Jewish, and then it goes potentially chayiv. So we go after the first point at which it becomes chayiv, and if it wasn't chayiv then, it can become chayiv afterwards. But he's not Jewish, and it can't become chayiv now. So then we go after the last point when it can become chayiv, which is the moment before it forms a crust in the oven. At that point, if it's already Jewish, it becomes chayiv in challah. Okay? So again, Rabbi Hillel B'Shem Elazar says, "Motar Akiva L'Chachomim B'Isas Hek." Okay, it's going further. Wait, let me go back to the two dots again. Rabbi B'Shem Elazar said, "Motar Akiva L'Chachomim B'Isas Hedyot by a commoner's dough Shagugula Tibula, that the kneading of the dough is what makes it tevel." Rabbi Hillel B'Shem Rabbi Elazar, top of Yud Chesam base now. Rabbi Hillel B'Shem Rabbi Elazar says, "Mod Rabbi Kibul Rachoy Rakiba Kitzitz Rachomi beisas hekdesh by the dough of hekdesh." This is a logical sense of what you just said. That when the dough goes to hekdesh, shekigula paitra, right? That the kneading in the hands of hekdesh what exempts it from challah. Rakhana Mar. Now, what does Rav Kahana say? Because Rav Kahana says differently, it seems. Divir Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, ein miruach poiter v'makom hekdesh. Now, the Gemara is going to pick up in a few lines about the fact that Rav Kahana switches the discussion from Gilgul to miruach. But right now, the Gemara doesn't make anything of that distinction. All the Gemara knows is that Rav Kahana says that when the miruach occurs in the hands of Hekdesh, you might say it exempts the fruit from ever becoming chayv and meiser. So the Rav Kahana, it'll become chayv and meiser later on when the Yisrael gets it back. Okay, when the Yisrael gets it back, then it's going to become chayv in meiser from that point. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda said, again, not drawing distinction between the two, between the use of miruach on the part of Rav Kahana and the use of Gilgul on the part of Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Yehuda looks at it at face value. How did the Kahana, the same in Meber Rav Kahana, plead with Rabbi Elazar, argues Rabbi Elazar, right? They seem to argue with each other, right? Because one says it remains part, and one says it becomes chayv later on. Says the Gemara, "Manda Mar Gilgul Poter." Again, this is all Rabbi Yehuda speaking. He says that Gilgul, the rolling of the dough, exempt. If that's done in the hands of Hekdesh, it exempts from challah. He should also hold that miruach poter. He should also, when the Hekdesh smooths out the pile of fruit or grain or whatever it is, that should also exempt you. Umar Domar and Gilgul poter. He who says that the kneading in the hands of Hekdesh does not exempt you from challah. Ein miruach poter. The smoothing of the pile also does not exempt you. So it must be that Rabbi Lesser and Rav Kahana argue. Begum, in any event, however, Kirabonin, like the rabbis, Gilgul Poiter B'Shus HaGoy, when the Goy does Gilgul, needs the dough, so that exempts from challah. Now, V'Ein HaMiruach Poiter B'Shus HaGoy. The miruach does not exempt if it's done in the Rishus HaGoy. In other words, if the fruit smoothing pile does not. To Kasha Rabbah. Says, "Mar, that's difficult though. How can that be? That seems to be inconsistent. If a gugu poit der b'shus ha'goy, if the kneading in the hands of a goy exempts from challah, so then ain't a yiruch poit der b'shus ha'goy. You're going to say that the smoothie pile in the hands of goy does not exempt from ma'aser? What's the distinction? Says Gemara now, special gzeres ha'kosev, shan yohi, it's different. D'chsi, because it says, v'cho ma'asar horetz, Mizera Oretz. It says, V'chol. I should have emphasized V'chol. All Meiser. What does all Meiser mean? Even if the Miruach was in the hands of a Goy, in the hands of Hektish, you would do the hands of Hektish. If later on a Jew acquired it, becomes Chayv and Meiser. Because V'chol. V'hacha. That's the word. So what? So by Chal doesn't say Leis Chesiv Milech Mar. Doesn't also say from the bread of the land. Says more. Yes, Milechem, but v'lo Kol Lechem, not all bread. So therefore, there's exactly because of the word Kol, Mr. Zuber. Still some left. The Ruach of a Goy doesn't exempt. Because it's a special service because of V'chol. So therefore, even after the miracle was done in the hands of a Goy, later on, it could still be Chayiv, when it reaches the hands of Yisroel. By, however, Chalo. Once the Gilgul was done in the hands of a Goy, according to Rabbanan, who argued in Rabbi Akiva, that's it. There's no later stage in which it could be Chayiv and Chalo. Because it doesn't say Kol, it just says Lechem Aretz. Okay? No such thing as till it becomes crusted in the oven. Now, I'm Rabbi Chanina, Breder of Hillel. Rabbi Chanina, son of Hillel, said, "Min ador de rabbanon, from that which the rabbanon, the way we reconcile the rabbis, ono yofin, we learn from this, the late ador de Kahana, pliga Rabbi Lezer, that Rabbi Kahana and Rabbi Lezer don't necessarily have to argue." What did Rav Kahana say? Rav Kahana said in Rabbi Akiva that Miruach of Hektish doesn't exempt. Whereas Rabbi Lezer said Gilgul of Hektish exempts. And we thought that's a machlokus. But now it's no longer a machlokus. Why? Because Miruach of Hektish doesn't exempt. Why? Because of the word V'chol. Whereas Gilgul of Hektish does exempt Rechala, because by Chala there's no inclusion of the word V'chol. That's what Gemara is about to say. Okay? Says Maram Rabbi Chinah Brein of Hillel, Minatot Rabbanin, from the way we reconcile the rabbis, Anan Yofin, we learn, the Leis Adot the Kana, pleaded Rabbi Lezer. That which Rabbi Kana said is not that which Rabbi Lezer said. You know, I don't know. I don't know why Rav Kahana in the Yerushalmi is not called Rav Kahana. The Bavli, of course, is called Rav Kahana. But Yerushalmi is not called Rav Kahana. Perhaps because they didn't like him because he was a Babylonian. I don't know. Rav Kahana came, Warren Bar Mitzvah says he killed somebody, a guy in Chutz Laretz, and therefore he had to flee to Eretz Yisrael. And then he sat in front of Rabbi Yochanan, and then he had a split lip or with a cleft palate or something, and Rabbi Yochanan thought he was laughing, mocking him in the shir, and he died, and Rabbi Yochanan brought him back to life. It's a whole episode there. So, could be Rav Kahana was not held in high esteem because he was a Babylonian, even though he was a tremendous lamdan. I don't know. But the bottom line is that he's not called Rav Kahana in the Yerushalmi. Because in the Eretz Yerushalmi, they had true, in Eretz Yisrael, they had true smicha. In Bava, they just had the Yuri Yuri Yad and Yad, which wasn't real smicha. But you see later on, we'll see later on, Rav Huna appears in the Pinu. Today, we'll still see. Rav Huna appears in the Yerushalmi as Rav Huna, and not as Huna. So, yeah. Even Yeruach was done by a Goy, right?
Now, aren't you saying that with respect to the distinction for Hektish between Meruach and Gilgul, we're saying that Hektish could still be
No. Even Meruach was done by Hektish, it's still Chayiv afterwards, right, when a Jew takes it back over. So it is consistent. Okay, again, let's start from two dots again. Amr Kanir, Breda of Hilo. I mean, I thought the Rabbanan, the way we explained the rabbis, honor Yofim, we learned late Sato the Kana plead of Rabbi Lazar. But that which Rav Kana said does not argue Rabbi Lazar. Kumar Rabbanan, I mean, just like where the rabbis say, Gilgul Paita Bashus Agoy, that kneading by a goy exempts from Chala, even though, and I mean, Yuruk Paita Bashus Agoy, even though a smoothing a pile done by a goy is not exempt from Chala because of the distinct of Kuvichol. Kain Rabbi Akiva, so to Rabbi Akiva Omer will say, do you have the word Ein in parentheses?
No.
Okay, it should be in parentheses. It should be erased, as a matter of fact. Kain Akiva Omer, Gilgul Poiter, the rolling potters, Birshus, and here it should be Hektesh instead of Goy. Gilgul Poiter, Birshus, Hektesh, right? The kneading of the dough in the Shus of Hektesh exempts, whereas the smoothing of the pile does not exempt in the Shus of Hektesh, again, because we have the extra word Bechol. Okay? Says the Mishnah further. Halochei. Ho sa yisa min achitim u min ha'ores. This is a thing we had several times already in Masechta Challah. If you make the dough out of wheat and of rice. So normally rice is exempt from challah, but if the power of the wheat to rise, or cause the fermentation of the rice to be considered as rising as well, and therefore im yesh bo tam k'togar, as long as it has a taste of grain chayevis, it's liable to the obligation of challah. Furthermore, now the Mishnah goes really, really, really with tremendous chiddush and says v'yoytzibo domidei chobosu v'pesach. Even though it's mostly rice, you're yetzir chiv on Pesach with it. Why? Because it has the taste of grain. It has the taste of grain. So the impact of the grain is so strong that it makes you yetzir on Pesach with it. It's an amazing concept. Remain batam dogon. Well, everybody was aspired back then. I mean, there was no whistle to eat rice. That was much later. It's a European phenomenon. Okay? Remain batam dogon. If it doesn't have the taste of grain, it's not chayev in challah. Person can't be yetzir Pesach with it either. It doesn't have a taste of grain. Even though it has trace amounts of grain, that's not sufficient. Hanoitel Sor, now this halacha, I'm telling you, the rest of the Mishnah, I can only understand if we owe Truman our day and ages to Rabbanan. Which we do. It is. Otherwise, the whole thing is unintelligible to me. Hanoitel Sor, I mean, I understand the words, and you will too, but you'll see the Svara only makes sense if we say Truman is Manazes to Rabbanan. Hanoitel Sor, Misa Shlohorim Achalosa. You take dough. From sourdough, from a dough which is not yet had challah lifted. Now, what are you sourdough for? I know you know. To ferment more bread, right? In Breadsmith, they have a special cache of sourdough which they started in Milwaukee in the 80s, and they still use that in order to ferment their bread. So, must be very sour, yeah. Well, their dough is not very sour, yeah. So it's sour, yeah. Sourdough is a fermentation agent. Now, so you took from the sourdough, it's not edible, by the way. Sour is not edible. Sourdough is not edible. Torah says chametz and sour and Pesach. Sour is an inedible commodity, but it's also because of it, because it can is the catalyst for fermentation. Okay, sourdough bread is just a little bit of sourdough which caused the fermentation. It's not primarily sour. I see you and you knew that. Well, you're shaking on your head, but you didn't, right? Okay, but we have it in Pesachim, right? Pesach Pesachim, yeah. Right, there's a, it says there that I might have thought only sour is osur, right? Because it's I might have thought only chametz osur because it's edible, not sour. And the Gemara, when it learns why the Torah say both chametz and sour osur and Pesach, because right. So they this brought down in the Bavli. That's right. So. So Noitel Sor, you took sourdough from a dough for which the challah never been taken. And you use it as a starter in a dough which from which challah has been taken for fermentation. So how do you take off the challah now? How do you take off challah in the sourdough? It's all mixed in, right? It's obviously it's not discernible. How do you take off the challah from it? So it says the Mishnah, if you have more sourdough. Parasimokamaka literally means a living, but here it means if you have a solution to take sourdough from somewhere else, might be cheshbon. So you say, I put in 5 ounces of sourdough. I will now take from this sourdough a proportional amount for challah on the sourdough which are already put in to the other dough. Okay, is that clear? So I go to go externally to find a solution. What if you don't have the lab? If not, so then, motzi challah sachasakol. This is a very interesting thing, what Mishnah says. This is what I think, well, what Truma's drop on. He says, you take off from one Truma from the entire mixture, which includes both the sourdough, which didn't have challah taken off, and the regular dough from which had challah taken off, you take off one portion of that, and that you designate as challah. Now, why should that work? It would seem that it's quite possible that the stuff you're taking up as challah right now actually contains none of the sourdough, right? Because perhaps it wasn't mixed in completely. And certainly, it's quite likely it wasn't mixed in proportionately. So why should this work? So he brings down, the reason why it works is because since Tev from Erie brings this down, since Tevel forbans a dough b'mashu, why is that? Because the Darvish Hishmati and something can be rectified. So everyone asks the dough b'mashu. So it's considered now as if this whole dough is Tevel. And therefore, whatever you take off works as challah. So they're very difficult svara. Really very difficult, right? Because the fact that it asks the koshu doesn't change the entire dough into Tevel. The heter, which is the majority, is not batel to the isser, which is a very small minority. Yet it seems like the Meiri is learning that way, which is very difficult. I don't know, but that's what he says. So I think the only reason it works is Shuma and Chalab is not as Rabbanah. So they make one said it's good enough. You consider this as if you take a hit the proper proportion of what you're supposed to take in your handful. But I have another alternative explaining, not like the Miri, which is that since sourdough, promise won't work with yen in the Mishnah, but at this point in the Mishnah, one could say, since sourdough is a catalyst which impacts on the entire dough, so therefore the entire dough is now considered proportionally to have sourdough, you know, components therein. It seems more reasonable, but it's not going to work out. It seems really great, but it's not going to work out because the next case. Look at the next case. Kayotzibo. Similarly, they say Mesik. Isles which are harvested in normal fashion. Shneisarva, which got mixed in with Zaysenikov, with olives which were harvested by poor people. So the poor people's olives are exempt from Trumasomysis, right? The olives which are exempt, which, because, like, Legashichampea, these are ones which are left on the stem. But the olives which are harvested in normal fashion are chayv in Trumasomysis. Or Inve Batin, normally harvested grapes. In Inveolos, in the grapes which are harvested by poor people and therefore exempt from Trumasomysis as well. Imiesh Loparasimokamacher, if you can take grapes or olives from somewhere else, then take from them the truma proportionally based on the amount which got mixed in. However, we have it mixed in unidentifiably, and you have no place else to use as your frame of reference to take truma from maestros. So then, moitzi truma trumas maestro leko. You take of truma and trumas maestro, which corresponds to the entire mixture. Now here, there's no concept of sourdough sending fermentation throughout the dough, right? We're talking about grapes. We're talking about any type of fruit. So that's why my second shamrim before doesn't hold any water, even though it was very nice. But here, what do you do? You take a Truman Truma's Meiser as if the entire thing is Tevel, even though you know it's not. But you take a Truman Truma's Meiser as if the entire thing is Tevel. However, basically because we fine you for having done this, so we make you take off more Truman Truma's Meiser than you normally should. So why we make you take off this the more Truman Truma's Meiser than you normally should? Because it's Chiyuv Misa, and therefore it's more severe. However, Meiser Lakol, V'shar Meiser, Meiser Sheni, the rest of the Meiser Rishon, and the Meiser Sheni, Lefi Cheshbon, now you don't have to take off on the entire mixture, but only proportionally based on what you originally had in the batch. Now, he points out, the Leib Yerushalayim points out the name of the Rosh and the Baal Tanur, but this in fact is not quite 100% accurate. You can't do that. If you had to take shul, say you had, let's make it, you had one bushel of grapes which are chayiv and trumas and maizes, which got mixed up in two bushels of grapes which are not. So now you have to take off Truma and Truma's Meiser based on the three bushels. But the only way you can get Truma's Meiser for three bushels is you take off Meiser on three bushels. Because Truma's Meiser is a tenth of the tenth. So how can the Mishnah say the Meiser you only have to take off on the one bushel which got mixed in? Yet the Truma's Meiser they take off on the three bushels. That's a paradox. You can't have Truma's Meiser on three bushels unless you took a Meiser on three bushels. So what does it mean? So the Leib Yerushalayim explains what it means is, of course you have to take off Meiser on all three bushels, but you get to keep two of those. What do you have to give to the Levi? Only the amount of Meiser corresponding to one bushel. Why is that? Because since that was all your chayv and meiser, so therefore that's all we make you give to the Levi as meiser. Although we make you take off meiser from all three bushels, because mine all three bushels, in order to finally find you more severely, in order to make you give three times the amount of truma and three times the amount of truma's meiser, which you would have had to give otherwise to the kohanim. We don't find it when it comes to Meiser, which is a lighter commodity, and there we let you keep two out of the three, even though you separated three, for yourself. Okay? I hope that's relatively clear. Okay, we find you on the Truman Truma's Meiser. The Meiser you have to set aside proportionally in order to provide that Truman Truma's Meiser, but you don't have to give that entire amount to the Kohen, to the Levi, only amount which corresponds to what you should really have to give. Okay? Hanoi Tosor Misa Schitim. Take sour dough from wheat. For noticing this is our and you put it into a rice dough. So if it gives a taste of grain, so then you have to take off challah. Why? Because now, though, like we said, in the beginning of the Mishnah, now it receives the parameter, the definition of wheat dough.
Tom,
but that's going to be a big machlokus in the Gemara. You're right, doesn't seem to matter. Gemara's going to discuss that. Vilavin, if not Ptur min achal, it's exam achal, doesn't have the Tom. Ikei lomar amrua tevel oser koshu. So if that's the case, why do we say that tevel osers, no matter how intestinally small the shear is? We should always go by taste, right? Says Gemara, if that's min bemino. Where it's min bemino, so then we go by mashu. A speck of tevel falls into the same type, right? A grape into a million grapes, it asks in mashu, bikoshu. However, shalobimino, when it's not in the same type, such as wheat into white rice, then we follow the parameters of noisinta. Okay? Sezmar, masnisa the low kram and gram shingamlia. Our mission is not a gram shingamlia. The shingamlia, the rate is safe of our mission, which you just learned, which you just pointed out. Our mission is not a gram shingamlia. The shingamlia says, it's not chayev chala, achayeva dog and kashir. It's got to not just have the taste of grain, it's got to have 5/4 of grain in it. Okay? Rabbi Yaakov, read him, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon, Lakish, New Testament Aleph, Halakha, Rabbi Shimon, Gamliel, Halakha, Zachar, Shimon, Gamliel, this is back. So it has to have the shear of wheat folded into the rice. Rabbi Hila said, Bank Rabbi Noach, some whether it's like the rabbis in the land of Israel, or the rabbis in Babylon, Amrin, they both said, Nalikar Mishnah, and Nalikar Shimon Gamliel. You have to have a majority of grain and a taste of grain. It's got to be both. Okay? So it's not like our Mishnah. Ravuna Amar Taima Doga, Ravuna argues. Ravuna says as long as you have the taste of grain, Aval Pishain Ruba Dogan, even if it's not in the majority, it's not yet grain. Masdisa Pliga Ravuna, Lichora Mishnah argues in Ravuna. The Brisa, the following Brisa, I'm sorry, argues in Ravuna. The Brisa says, Ire Boshar Minim, if you mixed other stuff into with wheat, Achi Hey, but it's not Chayim Nechala, unless it has Ruba Dogon Vit Taima Dogon. You have to have both the taste and the majority of wheat. So it's a Kash Ravuna, because we see you need actual physical majority of wheat. So Pasar Law, so we explain Beminim Achirim. That's different. If you have rice with wheat alone, then all you need, says Rav Huna, is the taste of wheat. Because rice and wheat bond. If you have wheat with many other types of grains, rice, corn, hops, chves, so in that case, you need specifically to have a majority of wheat. Okay? So Rav Huna says, I also need a majority of wheat, not in correlation to rice, when you have other things other than the rice involved. Okay? Masisa pliga Rabbi Hila. Rabbi Hila said in Amar Aleph that both Rabbanan and all the rabbis say you need robe dogon. Majority of grain. So our Mishnah argues from Rabbi, our Mishnah argues from Rabbi Hila, because our Mishnah says, Hanaitel sorm isa schitin, if you take dough, he takes just sourdough from the sourdough made of wheat. So you put it into a rice dough. In Yeshua Tam Dog, it's got the taste of grain, or even the taste without the rove, without the majority. It's chay mechala. Vila petura. And if not, it's exempt. So that seems to argue on Rabbi Hila, right? So says the Gemara, no. Really, you need a majority of grain in order to be chayv in chala. What is our mission to talk about? Our mission to talk about something else. Begin Nisne, since he wanted to say the Basra, what we said substitute in our Mishnah, Hatevel Oser Koshu, Min Bimino, that the Tevel forbids. And the smallest speck is that which is similar in type. And if it's not in the same type, then it goes by taste. So here, in the previous case, we also mentioned that sourdough in rice goes by taste. That's because we wanted the two cases to flow together. But in fact, it's sourdough in rice, although it's not mentioned, you also need a physical majority of grain. Okay? So since the theme of the end of the Mishnah is time, that's why it focused on time. But it did not mean to preclude that you also need a physical majority as well. That's the way Rav Hila learns our Mishnah. Okay? Is that clear? Okay, so by the way, look, right? It's really taking the Mishnah out of context in order to explain it. Okay, but that's okay because we said that's the sheet of Rabban and the Talmud. That's the sheet of the Babylonian rabbis. So that's how they have to explain our Mishnah. Okay, now here's a typo also. It should be Rabbi Yoina. Rabbi Yoina have a mismech Rabbi Zira. Rabbi Yoina was supporting Rabbi Zira. Rabbi Yoina was younger, I guess. Rabbi Zira was older. And Shama Koyed Rabbi Hila. They heard the voice of Rabbi Hila. Yosef was sitting in Masni and learning over. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, the Rabbi Yochanan said, Time a dogon. If it has the taste of grain, Alpha Pisha and Ruba dogon, even though it doesn't have physical majority of grain, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yochanan said, that's That's Rabbi Yochanan. What opinion of Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yosef Shem Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Yosef said, Rabbi Yochanan, need both. At Sheruba dog and the time of dog, he both physical majority and a taste of grain. Amar, so he said, so Rabbi Zira just gave us the following point of information. It's the opposite of my hands. Simon Havalon, we had a simon, a sign, meaning in this case a tradition, the Rabbi Yossi Hosek Rav Huna. Rabbi Yossi Hosek Rav Huna, meaning that you don't need a majority of grain, all you need is that it should actually have the taste of grain, that suffices. Okay, we'll stop here for this evening.
What do we know about
Team Cheerios?
Yeah, multi-grain Cheerios.
Yeah. It does combine well, apparently.
So, combines well. There are only rice and yeah. Okay. We don't know. Corn is no raya, though, because corn is now they make Cheerios with corn and grain, but they didn't have corn. So it could be corn combined as well with everything. Okay. What says
black?
Yeah, what says black? No. That's not it. I think we're well ahead at this point.
Today
is Al Fader. Yeah. Oh, today, right, that's right. Today's Vlad is Tez Zion. And we're in your test. So.